Buenas.
Buenas.
Welcome back to Film Posers for Boricuas ranting, raving, and reviewing cinema. Today, we'll be talking about Star Trek, and our moderator will be Gabriela with a very special guest. Take it away, Gabriela.
Space, the final frontier.
These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise.
Its ongoing mission to explore strange new worlds.
To seek out new life and new civilizations.
To boldly go where no one has gone before.
That's that.
Hello, everyone. And today, we are joined by one of my dearest friends, Luisa Negrete. Luisa,
hello.
Tell us about yourself.
Hi, I'm Luisa. That's my name. I am a former creative writing student and a longtime Trekkie. And very excited to be here and join the posers.
Yes, we just couldn't do a Star Trek episode without my fellow Trekkie, with whom I watch First Contact every year on April 5th. You know, it's a crime. So thank you for joining us, Luisa, and for the
thank
chaos.
Thank you for having me.
And to help us teach the posers about the wonders of Star Trek.
I don't know if they're going to regret it. They might, but you know what? We're gonna roll with it. And I apologize in advance.
Yes, Luisa, Josie has a timer that she will set up when Luisa and I ramble for an hour about Star Trek Picard. So you have been warned. So, Luisa, what was your first experience with Star Trek? How were you introduced to Star Trek?
Well, growing up, there used to be the Sci-Fi Channel, and Star Trek would be on basically on a loop. But I never really paid much attention to it until I was quite a bit older, because growing up, it was only on with these really terrible dubs, and I just could not stand that. And it just didn't seem like it was very interesting, and how wrong I was. So when I was about 15 or 16, they put all of the old films on Netflix. And my mom was like, oh, this seems like something you would like. And I was like, what makes you think that? She knows me better than I do, apparently, because she suggested we watch the original motion picture. And we did. And I didn't know what she was on about me liking it, because of that like 18-minute scene when they're going into a wormhole or something like that. And I was like, this is boring. This is not for me. But then I started watching the series. And then, long story short, I ended up watching 29 seasons of Star Trek, all of the series, in about 4 months. So that was me, my first encounter with Star Trek.
Wow, 4 months. It took me like a year and a half to like watch all the series, because, you know,
I had no life besides Star Trek.
Yeah, for me, it was that basically my family is hardcore Star Wars, and I wanted to be the rebel one. So I purposely sought out Star Trek, and I started watching the original series because it was on Netflix. And then I found out that there were movies. So I just, you know, continued down the rabbit hole, and here I am today, like, what, almost 10 years later. I am this monster that's an encyclopedia of Star Trek. And here we are. So, posers, none of you had ever had any experience with Star Trek before. You know, you knew what it was, but you don't know it as well as Luisa and I do. So I want you to tell me what it was like watching Star Trek for the first time. Josie?
So my first introduction was when I was very young, so I do not remember anything, of course. My dad had the collection of films, and he made me watch it once, and then we were like, this isn't working. So that's when I became, like, when I fell in love with Star Wars. So that's that story. But my real introduction was season 2, episode 26 of The Suite Life of Zack and Cody on Deck. That is rightfully named Starship Tipton. That was my introduction. But yeah, watching these films and everything for the first time, actually like being able to remember everything and actually being able to digest everything, I will say it was very interesting. It was not what I was expecting, though I did have an idea of it. But yeah, I will share my thoughts later.
So I as well had an introduction to Star Trek with the Sweet Life on Deck episode of Starship Tipton, which is iconic and on Disney Plus, so everyone should check that out. I also had The Big Bang Theory with its Star Trek references, and some of those are very relevant when I was watching Wrath of Khan, because I was like, I heard that before. I know where that's from. And like when Sheldon speaks Klingon, the Vulcan nerve pinch, Revenge of the Dish Best Served Cold, Live Long and Prosper, etc. And I did watch the Kelvin trilogy when they came out in theaters. I know that upsets Gabriela, but I'm going to mention it because that counts. I was there for Chris Pine. What can I say? I was there to have fun. And, you know, after seeing the Wrath of Khan, Surges for Spock, etc., I understand Gabriela's point with Into Darkness, which I'm sure we'll get into later. But yeah, that's how I started with Star Trek, and now I'm here in this episode, which has been long awaited for Miss Gabriela.
Yes, we ran a poll on Twitter that literally said, should we set Gabriela loose and do a Star Trek episode? And many people voted yes, so we are delivering.
So for me, when you surround yourself with Comic-Con culture, it's inevitable to not know about Star Trek. So that was basically my first introduction. And I also watched the Kelvin trilogy when it came out in theaters. Got it on, so sorry.
What are you going to do? They were popular movies.
Yeah, and there was a moment where I also did watch The Big Bang Theory. So I kind of knew some of the Star Trek references. But watching the movies that you assigned me in the episodes, it was an interesting journey.
Yes. Well, if you're listening and you don't know, Star Trek is a very long, long, extremely long fandom. You know, it has so many series, so many movies, and it's still going on. You know, we have new series, we have upcoming films, so it's still going and the hype never dies down. So it all started back on September 8th, 1966, when Star Trek the original series premiered, and that show ran for 3 seasons up until 1969 when it was canceled. But it gained such a huge cult following that the first film, which was Star Trek the Motion Picture, was released in the 70s, right before Star Wars came out. And so obviously that introduced new people to Star Trek, you know, old fans reawakened and all of that. And then came The Wrath of Khan in 1982, which is considered the best Star Trek movie. Luisa, are you a fan of The Wrath of Khan, or do you prefer another one?
I think that is fair. I think that is fair to say.
So we have The Wrath of Khan, we have The Search for Spock, The Voyage Home, Final Frontier, which is the Star Trek movie that I hate the most. It's horrible. And we have Undiscovered Country, which is, again, a great conclusion to the original cast, because that was the last film that they were in until we started the films with the cast of The Next Generation came along, which is Star Trek Generation, Star Trek First Contact, which Lisa and I watch together every year on First Contact Day, April 5th.
We have to celebrate First Contact Day, waiting for the day we actually come and get picked up by the Vulcans.
Please, 15,000 days to go. And that wraps up the movies with the original series cast. Then comes Star Trek The Next Generation, which is my favorite Star Trek TV show. Yes, Next Generation writes. Star Trek Insurrection, which again is bad. And Nemesis, which it's an even number, but it's a horrible conclusion to the cast of The Next Generation. I think it's a disservice to this incredible cast. And then we stopped there. And then 2009 came along, which is the Kelvin Timeline movies, which I have thoughts about, which are Star Trek, Star Trek Into Darkness, and Star Trek Beyond. So those are the films. And then we have the TV shows, which is Star Trek, Star Trek The Next Generation, Deep Space Nine, Voyager, Enterprise. Enterprise ended in 2005, and then there was no new Star Trek TV show until 2017 when Star Trek Discovery came along, and then came along Luisa and I's greatest love of 2020.
Picard was what made 2020 bearable. Star Trek Picard is just a masterpiece, and it's a love letter to the fans of the show that have been in it, in the fandom, since the very beginning. And everyone should watch it. It should be required watching for everyone.
Ugh, it brought me so much joy. And yeah, we'll talk more about it later. So my question to the posers now. Based on what you saw from Star Trek, what was your favorite movie or TV episode, your favorite captain, if you saw multiple captains, and your favorite ship?
Okay, so my favorite movie had to be Wrath of Khan because I was emotionally invested in it. And like I had mentioned with Big Bang Theory, a lot of the references I was catching on, and I liked this movie in comparison to Into Darkness, talked about the test more, even though, yeah, you saw it in Into Darkness, but here it felt more like a mystery. I don't want to butcher the name, so I want to let Gabriela pronounce the test of the name.
The Kobayashi Maru,
see? Exactly. I like that, and I like that it showcased what Kirk did to try to beat the test, as he's the only one who's ever beaten it. I thought it was really well done, and it actually made me more intrigued to know what happens within the crew. My favorite captain, I have such an attachment to Spock, but I'm also like Kirk, you know, those two, let's just talk. That's the gay agenda right there. We just know that they belong together. You know, Love Story by Taylor Swift was written by Spock and Kirk, let's be honest. And, you know, they're boyfriends. You can't change my mind.
Absolutely right.
I love the Enterprise. The first ship
I have a question for you there, because where is Bones in this, like, relationship? Because Bones is also
there. An open relationship where Bones visits from time to time. You know, when he's not busy trying to save lives, you know. Bones, there's a mutual understanding.
Fair. Bones is the third wheel. Like, he's just there. You know, he got divorced. He doesn't want to get married again, clearly. He's just the third wheel.
Yeah, I will say, though, I will give the Kelvin trilogy one thing right, which was Carl Urban as Bones. I thought he did such a great job. I loved that version of Bones. It made me like him more. Although Bones' character is great. So yeah, favorite ship. I've always known the Enterprise to be the ship from Star Trek. I feel the Enterprise is iconic. It's classic. It is what sets the standard for this series of films, shows. Like, when you think of Star Trek, you just think Enterprise. And seeing it throughout the films, it made me appreciate it more. So I have to say Enterprise. Also, real quick with Wrath of Khan, also what I liked is how they used mind game, like the Kobayashi Maru. Yes, like the Kobayashi Maru. I will never get that name right.
That's what I'm here for.
Exactly. So with the Kobayashi Maru, I love that they use that test in the fight in space against Khan to beat him, because Khan is also a representation of the Kobayashi Maru in the sense of how he's this, in my opinion, the most threatening villain in the Star Trek series, because he is so quick. He's witty. He's smart. He is always one step ahead of his opponents in this case. And this was Kirk's challenge to beat him through space, which I gotta say, though, the visuals in these films, ahead of their time. When I saw the space scene in Wrath of Khan where they were like floating through space and I was like, purple. I was like texting Gabriela. I was like, Gabriela, this is fucking beautiful.
So your favorite character overall would be Spock?
You know, I think I want to lean towards Spock, but I'm also leaning towards Kirk. I understood Spock more in these films, which I think is great, which I understand why there's such a large fan base with him. But I'm also like, Kirk's iconic. But I think Kirk, and yes, I know it's William Shatner, but I'm also like Chris Pine. No, Kirk, I just see Chris Pine, you know?
Yeah, Kirk has his positives, you know? I don't consider him to be an absolutely horrible person. He has its positive, but, you know. Also, the time where he was written, obviously, you're going to have some things that are not so great.
Yeah.
And we have to love how camp William Shatner played him. It was just the level of over the top, the drama, the emotion of it.
That double fist, every time he did that double fist to punch someone, God. You know it's a good episode when he brings the double fist.
I saw the Rathacon in The Search of Spock. I gotta say, I was more entertained by the Rathacon. I was enjoying a lot the visuals, the special effects. I really like the set design in general. And I feel that the prop masters, they were really having fun. So the Rathacon was definitely my favorite film. Now, my favorite episode was The Measure of a Man. I gotta say, I was more invested in this watching this episode than actually the Rathacon. Because there was something, it was serious. What was happening, it was something serious. And I was like, oh my God, what's going to happen to this character? And how Picard, he was like, even though he is a android, he is still human. He had human qualities. And I liked the opening when they were playing poker and it was like some like a theme within the episode. And also Data was kind of sassy, not gonna lie. When he took the paper and he like lo rompió, I was like, sir, okay, that actually made me laugh. Favorite character. I was leaning towards more Data because of that episode. I was certainly invested in his character. So the other episode I saw was Mirror Mirror, and I was actually checking out more and finding more information with Uhura, because I kind of wanted to know her backstory, because Star Trek was first came out in 66. So I was like, this is very diverse, you know, coming on from that year specifically. And I was just checking out her backstory, like the actress, and it was really interesting. So I'm also leaning towards her character because of the backstory and the history behind Star Trek and the diversity. Now, my favorite ship, it was the Enterprise. It's classic. Those were the episodes in the series that I saw. So I didn't saw the other ships. So I'm leaning into the Enterprise. And yeah, for now, my favorite captain has to be Kirk, because in the Mirror Mirror episode, he made some wise decisions. And I just really liked his attitude and the whole joke that he has different girlfriends. I was like, who is this character? And then we have another woman. I was like, what's happening? And then he had a son in the Wrath of Khan. He didn't even know him. So I was like, sir, calm yourself, okay? Yes. Kirk was having a midlife crisis in the Wrath of Khan, okay? That's it.
Rita, you have very strong feelings for Data, as does every single Star Trek fan.
Data is one of the characters that I feel is the best written, probably in history, because he's not supposed, and also the way that he's played is just amazing, because he doesn't have emotions, and his actual range of emotions is very limited, but that android makes you feel feelings. And it makes you cry and it makes you laugh. And it's just so adorable to have a character that is like all powerful by many definitions. He's like stronger than the whole crew of the Enterprise combined. He's smarter than the whole crew of the Enterprise and the Enterprise combined. He's smarter than the ship. He's smarter than anyone. And still he's able to see the world with this sort of like a child, sort of like getting to experience the world and wanting to know what it's like to experience the world. And I love him, and I'm gonna go cry next quarter. Bye.
Well, like Data is one of the best written characters of Star Trek, so I'm glad you enjoyed him, Anna. Well,
yeah. Can I say again? Okay, another thing. He had a love interest. I was surprised by that.
Yeah.
He had a person that he really loved, and I just really love how he was talking about his belongings, saying that it was just very emotional. I don't know. I liked him.
Yes, but the true love
that of that episode. His life, yeah, sorry. Go ahead.
The true love of his life is Spot, which is also Luisa's favorite character.
Honestly, Spot is the ruler of the universe, as far as I'm concerned. Spot for the win. But what I was going to say about Data is that, I mean, that plot line of him having a love interest was very controversial at the time, because that was one weird episode in season one that everyone was like, what even is on with this show? But yes, that Measure of a Man is one of the greatest character explorations, I think, of everyone involved.
And I love how Data's character comes full circle in Picard. We won't get into details because we will cry again.
So I'm horrible, and this is probably going to make a lot of people angry. If you're listening to this and you're a Trekkie, I am so sorry. I'm that student that did not do the assignment. So from what I can speak of, my limited knowledge, I watched episode 2, The Wrath of Khan, and I watched episode 3, The Search for Spock, which is very interesting because growing up, my limited knowledge of Star Trek was based on the Sir Patrick Stewart rendition, so Next Generation. I did not know who William Shatner was until like a few years ago, mid-2010s. So again, I'm going to give a tricky heart attack.
Wait, you didn't know him from the iconic film Miss Congeniality?
I knew him. I knew him from Miss Congeniality, but I didn't know him as Kirk, you feel? Like, it wasn't until that moment. I think it was a Super Bowl commercial where he reprised his role or something. And everyone was like, oh my God, I'm that person. So what I can speak of, I'm only going to speak of Wrath of Khan because, well, Search for Spock, it was a little bit hard to get through. So Wrath of Khan, of course, Ricardo Montalban, how can we not speak of him? Such a great performance. He really gave it his all, and he was so convincing. Like, he didn't have to go that hard, pero él lo hizo, and I'm very appreciative.
He did that for us.
He did. And it was so sad because I was looking him up because I was like, I recognize this person. So I looked him up and then I realized, of course, he's the grandfather from Spy Kids because, of course, I am a youngin', like, I'm a 90s baby. Of course, I'm going to first think of him as the Spy Kids grandfather. But also, it was very sad realizing that he has passed. And I was like, no. So it was like one of those heartfelt moments where I felt like I was really going through something special. Yeah, I can only speak of the Enterprise. It's a nice ship. And I'd say that my favorite character is actually like between Uhura and Spock.
I mean, the Enterprise is Kirk's longest relationship other than Spock.
Yeah, I will say that I'm very excited. I'm still going to watch the episodes you recommended. And I really want to watch, of course, Picard because Santiago Cabrera. I need to experience that as well.
Hey, we'll get into him later.
I know, but so what I was going to say is that the thing is that I feel like I'm going to like the TV shows more because you can tell that this was meant to be a TV show, especially when watching the films. It was hard for me to get into, and I don't know if I'm being a snob, but it just felt like someone was trying to do a really long TV episode instead of a movie. So the pacing would kind of throw me off at times. But that is why I'm going to say that Wrath of Khan is better than Search for Spock, because Search for Spock felt more, again, like that feeling of a very long TV's episode, and you have like the act breaks that go to commercial, but there are no commercials. And then with Wrath of Khan, there isn't a steady flow. And of course, again, Ricardo Montalban, he didn't have to go that hard, and he did. He did it for us. Mira, Latinos in television and film, we love to see it.
To this day, no one has topped Ricardo Montalban as Khan. Like, Khan remains the superior Star Trek villain. Everyone loves him.
The thing is that as a villain, he's so effective because the Enterprise crew, they come across these massive, super powerful beings or these super scary monsters like the Borg or something like that. But the thing with Khan is that he's like a perfected human. Like, he's basically like a cautionary tale of what can happen if we don't basically ground ourselves in the values that the Federation promotes, like exploration and cooperation and teamwork and compassion and being good people. And that for me is what makes Khan so scary.
Yeah, I just wanted to add that he was willing to risk his entire crew to the point where, like, I mean, that's his demise. Like, he's as good as dead. He's practically dead and he still keeps going. Like, it was very interesting to see that side of humanity in a character.
I feel he's literally the embodiment of the phrase blinded by his own rage.
Yeah, and I think he comments to it. I can't remember right now the actual lines, but he does, like, he'd rather fall into vengeance than anything else.
To quote Kirk, Khan!
Mira, cuando el grito, Khan! I heard your voice.
I say it so many times, I am so sorry.
I also heard Gabriela's voice. I'm like, Gabriela, you look different here.
It was very funny because he just kept saying it. It was more than once. He was like, Khan! Khan! And I'm like, we get it.
He was so enraged that it was heard all around space, Josie. Luisa, now to you. What is your favorite show, movie, captain, character, and ship?
Ooh, okay.
Loaded okay. Question, I know.
Yes. So, favorite show is a tie between Voyager and Next Generation. Voyager was the third series to come out. It was sort of, it came out sort of in parallel with Deep Space Nine. I think there was some overlap there. Yeah. But Voyager, yeah, and The Next Generation. So that's my two favorite shows. They're both 7 seasons, long seasons, and they both build on the world in so different ways. And I could talk about it all day. So it was favorite show. And then the next question was, movie. Ooh, favorite movie. I have a special spot in my heart for the original motion picture because it was the one that introduced me to it. And with all of the pacing issues that it had, I think that it was very brave in what it was doing in terms of nothing like that had been done before to that extent, to that. It was a very ambitious attempt that today to us looks very like weird and why the hell is it so long? And it just needed a lot of editing and actual acting. I don't know, set building besides just some glitter and blinky lights and no one will notice.
And the uniforms anything. Were so horrible. But,
and the uniforms. Oh, no. It was very progressive in many ways as well. And then you see they had women walking around in t-shirts or no clothes at all, which, you know, not great, but hey, other times, I guess. So yeah, that was, I think that's a picture. That's a film that I love the most, not the best, but the one I love the most. Was that the question?
Yes. What's your favorite cap?
It is a three-way tie because it is Picard from Next Generation, Captain Janeway from Voyager, and Captain Rios from Picard for all of the reasons. I don't know if we're gonna get deeper into why Picard is such a masterpiece, but you know, Captain Rios is up there in the Olympus for me. Breathing gets harder whenever we discuss Captain Rios. That's something that happens.
What is your favorite ship?
Oh, favorite ship. The Enterprise is the pretty lady of the ships, isn't she? She, look at me talking about the ship like a she. That's what this series does to you. But Voyager was just so, I don't know, Voyager brought the crew back home and it was a reliable ship and it didn't let them hanging, and that ship withstood things that no thing should have ever withstood. So Voyager is also up there. But yeah, the Enterprise. Give me a holodeck. I want one of those like virtual reality. I need a holodeck. I need to go play in a holodeck. I need to go live my Pride and Prejudice fantasy in the and that's gonna be me if holodecks are ever a reality.
I do want to say,
what?
My favorite ship is Spock and Kirk.
Same.
Just saying.
Leave the Enterprise. Yeah, that's the real ship here.
Honestly, I agree too.
But also Kirk and the Enterprise. Like, that guy has feelings. actual real feelings for that ship. I don't know how comfortable I feel when I see that, but they exist.
I just love how different Kirk's relationship with the Enterprise is with Picard's relationship with the Enterprise, because under Picard's command, the Enterprise was destroyed like 3 times.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, Kirk would never. So, do you have any other character, not necessarily a captain, like another favorite character? I think I know who it is, but I just want you to say it.
Oh, definitely Data. And it's just, yeah, it's Data.
What about your Dex? Your himbo.
Tom Paris. My God, I forgot. How did I forget?
How did you forget your himbo Tom Paris?
Yes. The ultimate himbo, Tom Paris. He starts off trying to be this ladies' man type of character, and then we realize that he doesn't know how to do it, that he's too soft for that, that he's just not built like that. But I just love how good he is, even when he tries to be all like tough.
So, in my case, my favorite movie is always, always a tie between Wrath of Khan and First Contact. I love those films. Wrath of Khan for, you know, all the reasons that have been mentioned here. But I love First Contact because of the Borg. The Borg, out of all the aliens that are introduced in Star Trek, the Borg are my favorite one. And it's mostly about how terrifying they are, because they are a hive mind that you need to stop the queen to be able to stop them all. Like, you can't just kill them one by one. You have to destroy the hive mind, and they assimilate, and it makes them harder to destroy because they continue assimilating. Like when they are first introduced in Star Trek Next Generation, they use the phasers to shoot them, but you can shoot them once, but then they assimilate and now they're immune to that laser. And it was terrifying. And obviously the iconic cliffhanger from Best of Both Worlds with Riker. I rewatched it this week and it still hits. That cliffhanger is just love it. So in First Contact, we see the Borg again, and I love that. It was also directed by Jonathan Frakes, which he was the one that played William Riker. And if there's going to be new Star Trek content, I trust that man with every single Star Trek content, because he knows.
Proven. Yeah,
it's perfect.
He knows, and he directed some of the episodes of Picard and Discovery. You can tell that they were done with love by someone that knows what they are doing.
First Contact, to me, it's absolutely fantastic. It blends both, but it blends everything that Star Trek does well, you know, with the time travel, the tropes that it has, because Star Trek has so many tropes. And I find that First Contact is a good balance of everything that makes a good Star Trek movie, because obviously the main complaint is that the movies are just long, elongated episodes, which, yeah, some of them feel like they are, but First Contact feels like it's a movie. It feels completely separate from The Next Generation, and I love that film. And then my favorite captain, it's a tie between, obviously, Picard and Cristobal Rios.
Latinos in space. Latinos telling you, they'll be the death of me.
I will forever remember when Luisa told me, so Santiago Cabrera is going to appear in this episode. And I was just like, who's Santiago Cabrera? And you warned me that he's too powerful.
I tried to warn you. I tried to, yeah. And he didn't listen.
I love his character. I hope in the second season we learn more about him, because he's just an angsty captain in space and we love to see it.
What I love the most about Santiago Cardona's character in Picard is that he's not just Captain Rios. He's 5 different characters. He plays 5 different versions of himself. The holograms. He has these holograms that basically help him run his ship, because he's sort of this rogue character that is sort of like a space pirate type person. And he has these holograms that help him run his ship, but he modeled them after himself. But each of the holograms is sort of like a different facet of who he is. And then we have the nerdy one, and then we have the doctor one, and then we have the roughest of the rough version.
Emmett.
And then we have Emmett. And he manages to play each of them in such a distinct way that It feels like there is 7 people on the screen, but obviously it's just him, and it's just great.
Yeah, I think my favorite aspect of the holograms is how the engineer one is Scottish, because every single engineer in Star Trek TV shows and movies is Scottish, and I just love how they kept that in Picard.
I mean, we had Scotty, we had O'Brien. Who was like in Next Generation and also in Deep Space Nine.
Yeah. What was the name of the one from Voyager?
It was Belana Torres, she wasn't Scottish, but she was her Latina Klingon.
Yes.
Who we love. They'd fall into stereotypes of like feisty Latina, but you know what? I mean, it was the 90s. There was... Yeah.
Let's continue before we continue that. So those are my 2 favorite captains. Obviously, Janeway. I love her. You know, every single captain is, I love them all, but those are like my top 2. My favorite TV show is Next Generation, followed very closely by Picard, because again, a masterpiece. Please watch it. And my favorite ship, other than the Enterprise, I personally prefer the Enterprise from Next Generation, the Enterprise D, because it has the holodeck and all of the great improvements that it has had over the centuries. So I personally love that ship, but also La Sirena. Like, she's small but feisty.
Nothing fancy, but she gets the job
done. She got the job done. You know, they crash landed in that planet and she survived.
And now we'd like to take a moment to talk to you about our sponsor, Anchor, the easiest way to make a podcast.
So one of the things that can be said about Star Trek that is not the same for other franchises, like I'm just going to mention Star Wars because it's the one that it's mostly compared to, is that Star Trek is very progressive. Like Anna started to mention previously, in the original series, Uhura, which her name is Nichelle Nichols, she was the first Black woman to appear in a TV show where she didn't play a slave or a maid. It was the first time that there was a Black woman, you know, in space, quote unquote. And the first interracial kiss, which was between Uhura and Captain Kirk. So, but, you know, there are things that can also be criticized in the original series. But again, it was the 60s. So things were completely different than they are right now. So some things have aged very poorly. But at the same time, there are so many things that were done and so many things that were discussed in that show. By that time that you can't just help but think like, damn, like they really talked about this in the 60s.
I mean, when you think of who the kid that sat at the helm of the Enterprise was, like Chekhov, he was Russian in the height of the Cold War. And they got him in because they wanted, and I cannot believe I'm saying this about that actor. I love him to bits. I saw him on Comic-Con last year, but not last year. Last year, nothing happened. The year before. They got that actor because they wanted a young, attractive guy to bring in female teen audiences. But also they wanted someone that was Russian, so people stopped actually being scared of just normal, everyday Russian people, and to show people that maybe in the future, Russians and Americans could just be friends and actually be part of the same crew, which another point for Gene Roddenberry.
We also have George Takei, who's Asian, who was one of the pilot of the Enterprise, and he eventually makes it to captain. They definitely try from the very beginning to be progressive and inclusive. And I think it can be best seen in The Next Generation. Because in The Next Generation, one of the major plot points was that we have Worf, who is a Klingon. And he worked at the Enterprise. So it's kind of, if you know, the Klingons are like the mortal enemy of the Federation. And to suddenly have a Klingon on the Enterprise that Picard trusts him with his life. It says a lot about, you know, like what happened with Chekhov, that inclusivity and that we all need to be able to, you know, work together for the greater good and all of that. But I just love how in Next Generation, like the eye candy was so obviously William Riker.
They didn't even try to hide it. And being honest, we were here for it.
Yes, I watched William Riker and it's like, God, you're so hot. And then I remember he's like 16. Anyway, so in Next Generation, there's also an episode that, you know, I've never forgotten when the first time I saw it, which talks about the non-binary people. this was in the 80s, way before, you know, it was just so shocking. You know, we have episodes about sexuality, about racism, about misogyny, and so many things discussed again in this, in the 80s, which, you know, things were starting to change, but they were nowhere near how things are today. And even today, you know, it's really hard for people. But, you know, Star Trek really tried. But also, we can't go ahead and continue saying that Star Trek was the most progressive thing, because the women in Star Trek The Next Generation were treated so poorly.
They deserved better.
They were treated so poorly, like, especially Deanna Troi. They did her so dirty. You know, there's an episode where you can tell that it was a man who wrote and directed it, because it's basically a scene where she is like warming up to exercise and there's like a mirror behind her. That take is just clearly meant to denigrate her. And, you know, then her relationship with Worf.
I mean, that one was problematic for many reasons, but she was his therapist.
Yes.
Like, she was helping him with his kid after he lost his partner, and then they tried to make it so they were together. I'm so glad they retconned that and just made it clear that they each went their separate way, that that happened one crazy summer, and that was it.
But it was also how scandalous it was that Gates McFadden, who played Dr. Beverly Crusher, she actually left after the first season because she just could not handle how poorly her character was written, how poorly her character was treated. So she left after the first season, and she did not appear in the entirety of the second season. And then she came back in the third season because they fired that writer. But, you know, like, even though it was progressive in some ways, it still has its problems. And obviously, like, everyone agrees that Gene Roddenberry was a horrible person. He was an asshole. Everyone knows it. But one can't help but admire that he created, like, this quote-unquote utopia, in a way. A very inclusive space and a future, you know, that lacked all of the social problems that exist today. You know, it was when we see Star Trek, you know, there's no poverty, there's no hunger.
There is hope.
There is hope. Exactly. Everyone
and
is
basically we owe the return of Star Trek to a woman, the widow of Gene Roddenberry. She was the one that pushed to bring the show back. And even after his passing, she was very involved in the production and development of the following series. She was even in the series. She was Deanna Troi's mom. And she was also the voice of the computers in the Enterprise, which is just so amazing that she wanted to make what her husband started better and just improve on that base. And yeah, her passing is one of the saddest things that has happened to sci-fi.
Yeah, it totally did. And I think in Discovery is when you can see Star Trek's progressiveness to like the next level, because the cast is completely diverse. We have a Boricua in space, Wilson Cruz. We love him. So, you know, we have Michael Burnham, who is the lead character of Discovery, who's Sonequa Martin-Green. She's a Black woman. We have Michelle Yeoh playing a captain. Her character is so great. I love
an
her.
And an
emperor. Right. Yeah, Empress.
I think he calls herself an emperor.
I don't know. Empress. Whatever. She's still great. We love her. In the last season, they introduced like the first transgender and non-binary crew members to the Discovery. And again, in Picard, we have another Latino, Santiago Cabrera. And he sang Arroz con Leche in an episode.
We sang.
It was chaos because Luisa and I lost our minds.
We also lost our minds because we couldn't remember the lyrics of the song. And we had a whole debate of whether it was the right version or the wrong version and what was happening. And then we discovered that basically every, not even every country, but like every neighborhood in Latin America has a different interpretation of the song.
So, yes, that's one thing I really love about Star Trek. It had a progressive it had a progressive mindset from the very beginning, and it has continued to improve throughout the years. So posters, what do you think about that?
From everything that you mentioned, I totally agree that I really like how progressive it all was and how you can see that there is careful consideration about how you're representing people. Now, when it comes to how you're treating those people, it's a whole different story, especially because you know how I feel about Gene Roddenberry, which, just a quick background, I had to read a script based on his life for a class, and I didn't know anything about him, so I was like, this man is horrible, especially like all the cheating, all the alcohol, etc., which is very interesting because he was collaborating with Lucy for the production company of Desilu, because while they were getting divorced, like, she got the rights and she's the reason Star Trek like happened. So it's very interesting that this show was really pushed by women.
No, I definitely agree with what Tim said. I love seeing how Star Trek has been so progressive when it comes to race, when it comes to sexuality. It's very ahead of its time, but it was also so subtle in terms of how they approached their details and normalized it. I actually really commend them for that, because a lot of things that were taboo at the time, Star Trek got right and was able to like lay the groundwork a bit in terms of approaching it through a general audience, because Star Trek is something that's beloved by many. So when I think about the aspects Gabriela presented with representation, I have to say it's really well done.
Yeah, especially because it just goes to show that it's not that difficult. If they were doing it back from the 60s to the 80s, what's the excuse now?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, especially with Latinos in space. Like, it's so important because, sure, to someone, it may not mean anything to see something covered on the screen, but to someone who identifies as Latino, who wants to become an actor, who wants to be on a brand as big as Star Trek, whose dream is to be up on that screen, seeing that representation there could mean the entire world, could be the hope for that person moving on to keep following their dreams. It's so easy when you think about it to just go, you know what? I want to cast a Latino on this role, and I want to give them a great part because they're talented. And that's what I like. Star Trek doesn't go, we have to check a box to make sure we cover everyone. They just do it organically, and they do it because the person they cast or the role they write is right, and it fits with the story they want to tell, which I really appreciate, because it's like Josie said, Hollywood doesn't like to take risks, and Star Trek, I feel, is a great risk taker, and it always pays off.
Which is very interesting, because you would blame it on the money, but I think Hollywood, well, discounting, like, ignoring the pandemic, I think Hollywood, up until, like, a year ago, was at a very good place financially compared to those previous years where there were worse, like, hardships going on. So it's just a matter of finding out what the excuses are, what the problem is, because also something that you mentioned, Juan, that I really liked was the fact that characters aren't Latino for the sake of being Latino. It's a character with a Latinx actor. Like, it's so easy. Why are we jumping through hoops?
And like we had with Voyager, like there was Belana Torres, who was not only Latino, but she was also Klingon. So she had like all of these like extra sort of nuance to her character. We also had Chakotay, who was played by a Mexican actor, who made sure to, I mean, that is one of the things that could be improved in terms of representation, because they cast a Mexican actor to play someone that stood for sort of like a generic Native American type person, but they didn't actually address it, but it was still a Mexican actor that went on to do big things. So giving these people the chance to actually be on the screen and be that example for young Latinos that were just, you know, especially with something like sci-fi that has been so white and so privilege dominated, to see that, hey, maybe you could be the pilot of a spaceship.
Yeah. And also Jonathan Del Arco as Hugh. Hugh is such a beloved character in the Star Trek universe.
Yeah, just very quickly, like also Ricardo Montalban.
Yeah.
Like for me, that was, again,
I find that they whitewashed that character.
We'll get into that later.
We don't need to talk about a Cumberbatch.
but just real quick, the fact with them, like, they let him keep his accent, which normally, like, some could argue that it's to exoticize Khan, but I think it was handled really well.
Also, the fact that Khan was supposed to be this product of the eugenics wars of the 1990s in the universe of Star Trek, and they cast a Latino with an accent to play it, is like so important from that, like, optics perspective, because it's like Latin America has always had this sort of like label of like, you're not whatever enough, and then they cast a Latino and it's like, well, it turns out that a Latino is a representative of this supposedly perfect human race that was crafted in a lab in the 90s, and then they let this guy keep his accent, and then it's like so massively done, and it's just cool to see that they took that risk, because it was a risk.
And it's also how, you know, again, at least in Discovery and Picard, I can full on say that, you know, all of the the people of color are good characters. Like, they are written well and they are treated well. You know, they have all of their different journeys that, you know, that not every journey is happy, but, you know, that they don't put them to suffer, you know, because like, they're older, like the person of color, they must suffer and they must justify their existence and all of that stuff. Like, none of that happens to them. I think it's how it can be best said is by Wilson Cruz, which his character is Dr. Colbert, and his partner Anthony Rapp. Oh my God, I haven't finished the new season of Discovery. I'm like behind on the names. But Dr. Colbert and Anthony Rapp, I think that they are a couple, you know, so it's like a biracial couple, an interracial couple in Star Trek. And like, their treatment in Discovery is just, you know, they just exist and they're a couple. That's it.
Like, their arc is not their identity, which is so important, because so many times with minorities, whatever minority we're talking about, it is like, oh, maybe in another time or by another producer or by another franchise, the arc might have been like, oh, he's gay, but he doesn't want to come out. And then that's the struggle. No, this is a couple that is having issues like any other couple would, that are in a very high stress environment. And because of that, the relationship suffers. But it has nothing to do with their individual identities. And that is so important, because not everyone's life is about who they are.
So I think you guys already hit the mark on what I thought about Star Trek and their representation. Again, when I first started the episode, I was surprised by so many representative characters in Star Trek. Uhura, we have Sulu. And I was also surprised that within the episode, they were able to put themes that were very delicate in the time, but it was really, how should I say it, seamlessly, how they played out in the episodes. So I really also like that about Star Trek. And yeah, even though they had controversial themes, they also handled it well. And yeah, I remember, Gabriel, when you said about the Klingon, because in the Measure of a Man episode, we had a Klingon character, and I was like, but isn't he the evil guy? So I also liked that aspect of when they even, like, welcomed one of the most, like their enemy. Yeah, so I was surprised when I saw that. So yeah, that's, you guys basically said everything what I had in mind.
Well, I had one quick point, and that's that what Josie mentioned with Ricardo Montalblanc, and that's that when you think about someone like me, Anna, Josie, who we watch some of these films or shows for this episode, when you told us before Star Trek and you asked us, who do you think is the biggest villain? The first name that comes to mind is actually Khan, because we've heard like that he is like that bitch of Star Trek, like he is the top supreme villain, so we consider him the top tier. And then when you think about it, played by a Latino actor, kept the accent as Josie said, and he still managed to make enough of an impact that general audiences who are not Trekkies could say, I've heard of Khan And I know that he is supposed to be like the best villain. Like, that just speaks to the impact that Star Trek has with progress and inclusion, because really, a Latino actor being the most memorable part for a villain, sometimes even more than Kirk or Spock, depending on who you ask, is really impressive. And it also shows, like, look, if they can do this back then, you can still have the same impact now. You just need the right script. And Khan has amazing lines.
Definitely. And obviously, like, our new Latino in space, Cristobal Ríos, Santiago Cabrera. Yeah, Luisa and I run the stand club. Luisa is the president. So if you want to join the stand... Yes.
You can send your application. I'll be happy to accept. And that's perfect.
Yes. And there is a ritual that you must go through to be initiated into the Santiago Cabrera stand club.
If you survive, you're worthy. You need to watch the 2 seasons of Salvation.
Oh, I remember Gabriela talking to us about that. I know she went through it.
Yeah, she went through it. She survived. She was worthy. It's not easy, I'll tell you that.
So, yes, diversity in Star Trek, so far, it's been very well done, and hopefully in the future, because there will be new shows. You know, Star Trek Strange New Worlds, which is about Captain Pike, will be coming out next year. And then hopefully they better make this happen. The Kestra Troy Riker spinoff. I want to write for that show. So Star Trek people, if you're listening to this, hire me, please. Luisa, I will take you to the set and you can sit on the captain's chair. Obviously, since there was a gap between the ending of Enterprise in 2005 up until 2017 when Star Trek Discovery premiered, they wanted to reboot Star Trek and, you know, make it for new people who've never seen Star Trek. And that's when the Kelvin timeline movies come in that were made by J.J. Abrams, who famously ruined Star Wars. But before he ruined Star Wars, he ruined Star Trek. So those movies are the ones that star Chris Pine. Like, again, in terms of the casting of these movies, I really can't say anything bad because it was a good cast.
It was a great cast. Like, that's, if anything, that's the thing that makes me be angry.
Yeah. So, you know, we had Chris Pine as Captain Kirk, Zachary Quinto as Spock, Carl Urban as Bones, Zoe Saldana as Uhura. You know, it was a really great cast. And then, since J.J. Abrams was not a Star Trek fan. So that's like the big mistake. And you can tell. Because he basically made Star Trek into action movies. When Star Trek is not just about the action, it goes deeper than that. They had to give it a new name to be able to fit into the canon. That's why it's called the Kelvin Timeline movies. Because basically what happens is that they destroy the Kelvin with Captain Kirk's father inside, so he dies. And for that reason, Captain Kirk never joins Starfleet and he becomes this rebel, you know, on Earth. And then Captain Pike comes along and is like, you need to join Starfleet, and basically pushes him to do Starfleet.
Especially when you consider that, I mean, at least with Star Wars, obviously you have the novelizations and all of that to consider when you come into that canon. But when you think of Star Trek, you have 5 series of 7 seasons, 4 of them with 7 seasons. I mean, there's a hell of a lot of episodes to go through. And to just arrive and be like, I want some of it. Let me see how it comes out if I write it.
Absolutely not. And, you know, the first one is decent. Like it's okay, it's decent. But I think Star Trek Into Darkness is a crime against humanity. First of all, there was so much secrecy going into Star Trek Into Darkness because they were like, oh, we're not going to say which villain we're going to do. Because in the first one, it was the Romulans. And I remember when I watched that movie, I had no idea they were the Romulans because they gave them these horrible face tattoos. Like, why? You already have the designs of the original Romulans. Like, why was it so hard for you to do the exact same character design? Like, I don't understand. And in the second one, they were like, oh, we're going to keep it a secret. And then obviously, the Trekkies everywhere were like, well, if they're going to keep the villain a secret, there's only one possible villain that they can do, and that's Khan. So basically, every single Trekkie figured out that it was Khan before the movie even came out, even though they kept saying, no, his name is John Harrison. It's John Harrison. It's like, there's no John Harrison in Star Trek. So everyone knew that it was Khan, and everyone was outraged because Khan was Benedict Cumberbatch, who is white. And what's even more atrocious is how they had Spock beat the shit out of Khan.
Do they even know who the character is? It was an insult.
They really made zero effort to try to learn the backstory, because even I, who is like, who has just gotten to like understand it even more, knows that that goes against Spock's entire being, his code, what he was raised with. Like, that goes against his entire being. And there he was beating the shit out of Benedict Cumberbatch. And I'm here like, did no one have a Trekkie on, like, set to be like, hey, no. Like, you could have hired Gabriela for half of the price, and she would have been there, like, correcting the script with her red pens, her red Sharpies. Like, she was ready. She was there. Tell him, Gabriela.
Oh, my God. I would have just been like, yeah, no, you need to write a new script. But yeah, and it's also like very insulting how they had Spock and Uhura together.
I mean, personally, when I first saw the Kelvin universe, me as a person that didn't know what Star Trek was, it was okay for me. Because mm-hmm. it needed the basic things that you needed to know. But of course, because you don't know Star Trek, you're like, okay, this is good. Obviously, it's going to infuriate the fans. But now, seeing some of the characters and how they are, it's completely different, because when I saw Spock, he was kind of like emotionless, and then we see him having a relationship, and I was like, what is this? Okay, this is totally different. And here's the thing, when Khan came, I actually liked that movie, and I liked how they kept it a secret, because when I was in the theater, people started to cheer and scream that, oh my God, it's Khan. So I think they just wanted a reaction out of the Star Trek fans, and also the introduction to new people that they want to like be in the fandom.
But I think that casting a white person in a role that, you know, is not meant for a white person, because his full name is Khan Noonien Singh. So you're telling me a white person is...
No, yeah, I completely agree. I completely agree with you. I just didn't, of course, I didn't know.
Yeah, no, yeah.
But, who he was, so.
Also, that's Ricardo Montalblanc erasure. Josie, speak on this.
Yes.
Yeah, no, it's disappointing. Like, I didn't know, again, I haven't seen these movies, so I didn't know who Benedict Cumberbatch was supposed to be until we were talking about, like, prepping for this episode. And then I finally saw Ricardo Montalblanc as Khan, and I was like, excuse me, this is very insulting.
Into Darkness tried to set up something, because it had, you know, it introduced many characters that end up being important in the Star Trek universe, but then J.J. Abrams left to ruin Star Wars. So we got a new director for Star Trek Beyond, which I must admit, it did capture the essence of Star Trek. Star Trek Beyond had a lot of pressure because it was coming out on the 50th anniversary of Star Trek. So there was a lot of pressure. Like, I showed up to the theaters and the Trekkies were wild. It was made by the director of the Fast and the Furious franchise, Justin Lin. And he did a good job. Like, even though the villain was a new one, it was Idris Elba, but it was like a new villain never before seen in the Star Trek universe. And it was done pretty well. So I did like that film. I liked what it did and how it honored the previous actors of Star Trek, and also had honored Leonard Nimoy, who had recently passed, and also Anton Yelchin, who had also passed. Did a good job, that one. But overall, the Kelvin timeline is not what's overall is not what Star Trek truly is.
What I dislike the most is when they try to make it like darker and grittier, and something like this. I feel Discovery has done it quite well in that is presenting us with this other face of the Star Trek universe where things are not as clean cut as we had been told with the original series or with Next Generation. How it presents characters in a more nuanced way, how people make mistakes, how people are messy, how people do things for the wrong reasons, how people do bad things. And I feel like that is the way to go, because Discovery still has a lot of the charm of the original Star Trek, I feel. it's not my favorite. I feel it has some pacing issues and episodes that maybe don't feel like they actually fit into anything, not even Star Trek, not even the series, not, I don't know. But definitely the star is Picard for, I don't know, yeah, the new wave, I guess we could call it, because we have so much coming now. We have the first animated series since the 60s that is going to have Captain Janeway reprising her, not her role, but she's going to be voicing another captain. And this is going to be Below Deck, I think it's going to be called.
Lower Deck.
Which I'm really excited about. I am. And I'm really looking forward to that coming out to introduce tiny little humans to Star Trek.
Yeah, very exciting. And also how I remember when Picard premiered and there were so many people that were mad because they were like, this is too political. Have you ever seen Star Trek?
This is not new. It's so great. And I love how involved in a production Sir Patrick Stewart was, and just, I mean, that you can tell that man loves that role and that he gives it its all.
And I thought that, you know, them bringing back Picard, who is like the most beloved captain, was just huge. And then bringing back like Seven of Nine, obviously that was huge when she appeared.
And Seven of Nine got her, I feel Seven of Nine got her justice finally, because Seven of Nine was a character that started being literally just eye candy, the same range of emotion as Data, but she was not allowed to have anything more interesting to do than look pretty in a full bodysuit, push to have her character develop further, and she ended up being basically the mother of this tiny Borg people that they reclaimed. And then her in Picard being like a justice fighter and a freedom fighter, and just it is just what we needed. And she looks as gorgeous as usual, and her acting is just on point, and I love her so much.
Yes, she was the surprise in Picard of the cast members that appeared, because I knew obviously like Brent Spiner reprising his role as Data, obviously Jonathan Frakes as Riker, and Marina Sirtis as Deanna Troi, but Seven of Nine was one that really surprised me when she appeared. Like, I screamed when she appeared on screen. It was just such a great moment to see her again, and finally, see her character get justice, and Data's ending as well, because, you know, if you saw Nemesis, I'm sorry to bring it up, Lisa, but it has to be talked about. Again, I feel that Picard was a good redemption for how certain characters were treated by the end of the series and by the end of Nemesis, which the reason why I hate Nemesis is because how poorly it said goodbye to this cast. And in Picard, you know, we finally get a proper goodbye to Data, which it hurt, but it was the right thing to do. And as well, we have, like, I don't think it's a send-off. I feel like we're going to see them again, of Riker and Deanna.
I think we will, because they too love the series themselves, the actors, and they wouldn't have put them in for just one episode if there wasn't any plans to have them back for more, I think. Let's keep our fingers crossed and hope for the best, because I really need that to happen.
I think the future of Star Trek is bright, because, you know, the actors, all of the actors are still involved in the productions, and, you know, they are taking so much initiative to make sure to include diverse voices, not only in front of, but behind the camera. And I hope to be a part of it. I want to be a part of it. I want to write for Star Trek. Like, I would peak.
I don't think people know what they're missing on by passing on Star Trek, because I do feel like the fandom is had died down in that gap we had between Enterprise and then the Kelvin timeline, and then after the Kelvin timeline, a lot of people want to pretend that never happened. But I feel like those shows and those films have so much to say still, and they have so much wisdom that we could still use and put into practice now. Like, what better than to make the mission of your life to boldly go where no one has gone before, in a journey of exploration and getting to know yourself and getting to know new people and learning and making that your life journey. I think that's the way to live life and to make the most of it. So as soon as this mess of a pandemic is over, you'll see me trekking around the world. Yes. Probably not because money, but I will try.
Yeah, same. But also, I think what's very interesting about the Federation, the United Federation of Planets, which is what Starfleet belongs to, and what they have created, you know, Planet Earth has created with all of those planets, and they continue adding more, is how anti-colonialist it is. How the prime directive is that you cannot interfere with a planet unless they want you to. Because if you discover a new planet with a new life, you give them the choice. If they want to belong to the Federation and, you know, work together and be together, or if they want to be left alone and do their own thing. I think that's just very interesting and fascinating. And I hate how it was completely violated in Star Trek Into Darkness and no one talks about it. But, you know, I really like that idea of the Federation being anti-colonialist. Posters, do you have anything else you would like to add?
I feel that while I was hesitant with this episode, I can appreciate the Star Trek brand a bit more. And while I can't say I'm going to become a Trekkie after this episode because I have too many other fandoms to be a part of, I can genuinely see why this was so important to Gabriela, why the show is important to Gabriela, why it's important to so many other fans out there. And I really liked Wrath of Khan. Now it's probably one of the best things I discovered this year. And the last thing I want to say, the search for Spock could have been an email. It would have been a long email, but you know what? It could have been an email. Also, I texted Gabriela when I saw, because she forgot to tell me about the beginning, because I had just seen Wrath of Khan. I was emotionally invested. I was going through it. You know, the gay agenda was there. And there they were playing what happened at the end of the second one, at the beginning of the third one. I'm be like, Gabriela, you know what I just went through. And now you're making me watch this.
We all went through it, Juan.
Okay. But not when someone's emotionally invested like this.
We all were emotionally invested in the Wrath of Khan.
Oh, I was going to end it by saying that Josie does have a point. While some of the films may feel like a very long episode, it sometimes can be like a vibe. So I'd say if you're going to watch these, start with Wrath of Khan and then take it from there. Because I do agree, if I would have started with the first film, like Gabriela said, like, you're not going to appreciate it, start with Wrath of Khan.
Yeah.
Like, that makes sense.
Because the first one, like Lisa said, it did try to do something new, but I think that they didn't know how to write a movie based on a TV show.
Nothing like that had ever been done before in that scale. Like, especially the films that came after, they were just figuring out how to do, like, sci-fi to that extent of world building that you needed to have.
So when they announced that we were going to do a Star Trek episode, I'm not gonna lie, I feel a bit overwhelmed, because when you're like revocando información, it's a lot of episodes. It's so much Star Trek that I was like, this is too much, okay? And yeah, I could get why some people could be hesitant, like myself, to start this show, because it is a lot. It's a lot of time to consume. But seeing some of the movies and the episodes, I could see why Gabriela likes it. And I appreciate what they did. I appreciate that they were really ahead of its time. I loved the production design and the prop masters. I really loved that. And yeah, if you want to start Star Trek, just do it bit by bit, honestly. Take your time, because this is a lot. And I feel like if you want to start it, there's no pressure to it.
Yeah, there isn't. Like, I think, because obviously, like, Trekkies know it's a lot, and that it's really hard to watch it all and get through, like, rough seasons of, you know, it was hard to get through Enterprise, not gonna lie. Like, watching that show was rough.
Like, pulling teeth at some points. Enterprise is just so different to everything else, and it does take time and to some extent effort. There are some seasons that are just not easy to get through. I think it's worth it, but that's just my opinion. But I do think that if someone wants to get started, now is a good time. Now we're living through a golden age of Star Trek, I think. Watching Discovery and watching Picard is a great place to be. If you want to get to know these characters or this world better, the other series are there waiting for you.
Again, if you're interested in Star Trek, you know, start at your own pace. Maybe read, you know, the summaries of the different series and pick the one that piques your interest the most. Or if you want to start an order, go ahead. So it's really up to you, like whatever you want to watch. And if you want to start by the Kelvin timeline movies, then hey, watch them. You know, maybe they'll inspire you to seek out the original.
Gabriela won't punch you. She promises.
I won't punch. I won't do like the Vulcan pinch. That is it for this episode. Thank you, posters, for watching Star Trek for this episode. I appreciate you.
You're welcome. Also, thank you. Thank you to Luisa for being here.
Yes, Luisa, thank you for joining
me. Thank you for having me. Thank you for listening to my rumbling. I love Star Trek and I love you guys. Thank you for having me.
Yes.
Out of curiosity, Luisa, where can the posers find you on social media if they want to keep up with you?
Ooh, if they want to keep up with me, they can find me on Twitter at Luisa, LuisaMMN.
That's all for today's episode. We'd like to thank you for listening and to give a shout out to all the kind people sending love our way. If you'd like to keep up with us, make sure to follow us at Film Posers on Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, and TikTok. Where can they find you, posers?
You can find me on Twitter at Gabby_Burgos27. On Instagram at GabbyCristina27 and on Letterboxd at GabbyCristina.
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram as Anna_Sophia53 and on Letterboxd as Anna_Sophia.
You can find me on Twitter and Letterboxd at Leading Mohicans.
And you can find me on Twitter and Instagram and Letterboxd as at the Josie Marie. Again, thank you for listening. And remember, we're all film posers.
Live long and prosper.
Live long and prosper.
Live long and prosper.
Live long and prosper.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.